You know, if you haven't checked out What Chaos yet, you oughta, because we've had all your favorite players on the show. I'm talking Seth Jones, Linus Solmark, Connor Bedard, whoever it may be.
We're live every day on YouTube at noon Eastern, but also available on all podcast platforms, including the one you're listening to right now.
We got guests, and yeah, we're also doing a bit of chit-chat, goofing around, laughing at what makes us laugh in hockey.
So regardless of how deep you are into your hockey fandom, come listen to What Chaos. We'll talk about your favorite team, we'll talk about your least favorite team, and everybody in between, and we're having a ton of fun doing it every single day, Monday through Thursday. It's What Chaos, presented by All City Network.
Everybody, how you doing? Well, that's good. Welcome to PHLY Flyers, presented by Mortgage CS. Check out mortgagecs.com/PHLY to start your home buying process today. Company and MLS ID number 1464766. My name is Bill Matz. I'm your director of fun and games for the evening. Joining me today, Philadelphia's number one hockey beat reporter, it's Charlie O'Connor. And before we get into what was a pretty big day, it's basically wrap-up day for the Flyers. It's Charlie's last day of school. Summer vacation starts.
My head is spinning right now.
Summer vacation starts in like an hour for Charlie. I'm
not until I write all these articles about everything that happened today.
That's summer reading, man.
It'll probably start at like midnight tonight when I finally get done transcribing. What was it, like 70 minutes worth of interviews?
They were both over half an hour.
Fucking wild.
It was, hey, we wanted transparency, Charlie.
We did. We got a lot of answers. And I don't even know where to start with all the answers
Before we get to Torts, before we get to Danny, the people need answers from Charlie O'Connor.
About?
Because Charlie O'Connor apparently decided on his way into work today to make himself a villain to the great people of the state of New Jersey by tweeting, truly the biggest positive about the Flyers season ending is that I no longer have to drive in New Jersey every day for a few months. Just the worst on every level.
I hold to this.
And Charlie,
absolute worst.
It is the worst. And that's why we love it. We're mad all the time.
That makes zero sense.
We're mad all the time. And it's because of that. And if you can't deal with it, we don't need you around.
They were working on like 6 separate cable lines on that road coming out of the Voorhees skate zone. You don't have to do it all at the same time. You don't have to make what should be a 5-minute run a 40-minute run. It's wild. What are we doing here?
There's a lot of work going on in New Jersey. We're building back better. Anyway.
Are you? Are you actually?
I just wanted to piss Charlie off in the first 5 minutes today.
Oh, my God.
And because he just came in such a great let's start with some of John Tortorella's stuff here, Charlie. And this is something I don't know if it's my main takeaway, but it's one of the things that he said that really stood out to me just about the way things ended this year. You know, they go on the 8-game losing streak. They lose, 9 of their last 11 games. After a year in which they overachieved and were resilient constantly, it just seemed like, you went out with such a whimper. And John Tortorella, one of the quotes that stood out to me, "I'm a little frustrated that I couldn't get the team to close the deal. I think it's my job to get it to the end. I think the team played hard right to the end. I just did not close the deal." And I like to see him put it on himself a little bit there. And we've been over it a million times. There are myriad reasons for this thing. I mean, it would be crazy not to just say, "Hey, man, the goaltending fell apart for a month. What are you going to do?" You know, certain guys went into slumps at the wrong time. We had some injuries, guys running out of gas, whatever it might be. But between the Coots benching, the Sandstrom thing that he ended up apologizing for, calling them soft after they forced overtime with 9 seconds left in the game against the Islanders.
All sorts.
I'm glad to see him take some responsibility for this thing, even if it's just like, you know, I'm the coach, I got to take responsibility, because I do think he tried to do the I'm torts, I'm going to push the buttons thing, and it just, you pushed all the wrong ones, bro. Like, it was red X's across on the slot machine.
I don't know if there were any buttons, any right buttons.
I don't know if there were right ones
either.
To push, no. Yeah. But I do like to see him, because we talked all year about the accountability, and it did seem at times as if accountability for thee, but not for me. Like, oh, I have family in, so I'm not going to talk. Oh, really? You happen to have family in the day you decided to put, like,
The two overtime
two
games that they lost.
Two of your worst players on the bench on the, like, not even to disparage those guys, but like, hey, it's all about speed and skill. We put out our grinders. That seems wrong. You know, I liked seeing him take accountability for that. What did you make of that statement? It's just nominal. It's what he has to say.
Even if it's nominal and it's what he has to say, there's still something to be said that he said it.
He also doesn't say anything because he has to.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Like, he says whatever the hell he wants. That goes back to what I'm saying, yeah. Where, like, yes, you could say that maybe he needed to do that, but he still did it. It comes down to the fact that he still felt like he should kind of take some bullets for his team here. Look, I don't know if what he did over the final month had a negative impact. This might have happened anyway. I do think he was trying to push every button possible because he was trying to, you know, somehow get this team to the playoffs. I think that is absolutely true. It clearly didn't work. The one thing, you know, he said the right thing in terms of taking accountability. The one thing that I find really funny, and this is very much torts in a nutshell, he says that he's frustrated at himself, that he didn't get the job done, and that's great. But then all of the things that we point to as like, well, that seems like what he's saying, then he will be like, no, I was completely right to scratch Sean Couturier. And no, like, I communicated perfectly fine with him prior to the scratching. And I think I was completely justified calling the team soft. And then what he'll say, this is the little sleight of hand he pulls. He takes accountability. Good job. But then he's like, the things I'm taking accountability for are things you guys don't even see, and I'm not going to tell you what they are. Those are the things I messed up, things that you don't know about. The things that you think I messed up on, no, actually, I was completely right on those things. It was these other things that you don't know about that I think I might have made mistakes on, and I ain't going to tell you what they are. It's just like, it's classic torts where, you know, he's, even when he's taking accountability, he's still being defensive, because he very well could have been like, yeah, you know, if my captain doesn't think that I communicated well enough to him what he needed to work on, then even if I feel like I communicated that well enough, clearly I didn't do a good enough job of letting him know. No, he just was like, nah, Coots knew. Like, I don't know why he said those things. And his agent's a little pissant, like, who he literally said.
Yeah,
so,
that part. Is that guy not...
He is his
Cootsie?
Agent.
So
yeah, he is.
What the fuck?
I don't know.
It's just torts.
I don't know.
Like, that's not good, right?
It doesn't seem the best.
I wanted to get to that. Like, was there something happening behind the scenes that we don't know about where, like, some guy has an account that people think is his agent, but it isn't, or... he's represented by someone else now? No, like, all that is...
Yeah, from
it was
what
on
I,
the up
from
and
what
up.
I understand, sometimes in agencies, there are, like, different people.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I'm trying to think back, like, the agency... For example, the agency that that represents Cutter Gauthier also represents Sean Walker. Sean Walker's personal agent was not the same guy who represented Cutter Gauthier. However, the guy who represented Cutter Gauthier is Sean Walker's individual agent's boss. Ah. So they're all clearly in conversation because it's a company and he answers to the guy who was directly dealing with the Flyers by Cutter Gauthier. It's all very, like, tight. So maybe that was the point Tortorella was making. But my understanding is that the guy who Kevin Kurz got on the record, like, that's his agent. That's the guy who's closest to Sean Couturier. I just think John Tortorella hates agents. I mean, he did the same thing last year with Joel Farabee when he basically was like, well, oh, some agent decided to talk to the media. Like, I think they're like the scum of the earth kind of thing. I think he just despises agents and he just would rather only the players talk.
Yeah, the guys who make the money for the people who make me my money. Yeah, they're the worst.
Exactly.
I just.
But no, and I'm not saying that like this was a bad press conference by John Tortorella. It's just that I don't want to give him too much credit for being accountable because, yes, he said, like, I'm accountable, but then wouldn't say what he actually felt accountable for. Because all the things that we believed, like, he was holding himself accountable for, then when he was directly questioned on, he's like, nah, I was right. It's like, okay, well, if you were right on all those things, what exactly do you think you messed up?
I messed up, after 70 games, my team was soft. Like, that's why I called them soft because they were, and I shouldn't have had a soft team. That's literally what it is.
I just, to me, this felt more like I've seen coaches and general managers take specific blame for certain things. This didn't strike me as John Tortorella taking specific blame. This struck me as John Tortorella basically being like,
I'm the coach.
Yeah, I'm the coach. The buck ultimately stops here, but all of those individual things you thought I messed up. No, I was totally right about all those things.
It actually wasn't any of those things.
Yeah, it actually wasn't any of those things. So, like, I guess I give him credit for holding himself accountable. I just don't think I'm giving him too much credit for holding himself accountable.
All right. Before we get into a couple of things, I think John Tortorella probably could have done a little better. And he's not going to do them better next year. He's told us that. Let me tell you about how you can do banking better.
Oh, I thought this is an ad read.
Yeah.
I thought you were going into the next topic.
Yeah. Now, before we do that, I'm going to tell you how you can do banking better. Listen, I've told you plenty of times I am basically an imbecile when it comes to, like, listen, if you need pro wrestling knowledge, I'm your guy. If you need, like, anything in terms of how adults function in the real world, not really my forte. So when we got Trumark Financial as a sponsor, I had to do a little bit of work so I wouldn't sound like the idiot I am when it comes to these things. And I looked into what credit unions are. And when you join a credit union like Trumark Financial, you become part owner, which means profits come back to you instead of going to shareholders. You get better rates, lower fees, and a better return on savings, and more flexible options with the same digital tools and tech that we come to expect from any of our banking partners. And maybe most importantly about Trumark, Trumark has local roots. Headquartered in Fort Washington with 24 branches in the Philly area, they serve our community and our people right here at home. Becoming a member of a credit union has so many benefits over being a customer at a bank. Just seems like a total no-brainer. Head over to Trumark.com/PHLY to learn more or find a branch near you. That's TRUMARK.com/PHLY. Federally insured by the NCUA. All right, maybe the most inevitable, funniest, grimmest revelation of the entire day was that coming in 2024-25, it's Rocky III behind the bench. That's right. If you love the first two, the third one's going to knock you out of your socks. Rocky Thompson will be back coaching not only the forwards, but that abysmal power play and playing the roles of Mr. T and Hulk Hogan, hopefully, get a little franchise juice in here, will be Danny Heatley and Patrick Sharp. How can they possibly justify this, Charlie?
Well, they sure are.
Okay. And
I don't know what to tell you.
I know you didn't make the decision, Charlie. I'm just like, they are, like, by 3% the worst power play over the last 3 years, or over the last 2 years. They finished with an abysmal, 12.3 this year. I mean, I guess it can't get worse.
Well, don't challenge them.
How can you possibly allow this to happen?
So here's what really frustrated me about that. And I'm of the opinion personally that I didn't want Rocky Thompson to be fired. I just didn't want him coaching the power play anymore. I thought they should bring someone in to do that, as whether it's a consultant or whether it's actual straight up power play coach, bring someone in to take those duties from him. That is not going to happen. To give you the information, both John Tortorella and Danny Briere confirmed that Rocky Thompson is going to be back, and that what they are instead going to do is they are going to use like a collaboration where they're going to use Danny Healy, who's a scout, obviously a formerly really good player in the NHL level. Patrick Sharp, another really good player. I mentioned John LeClair, obviously a power play stud, just a goal scoring stud in general. And I think Tortorella even mentioned Danny Briere. I'm like, oh, Danny was great on the power play too. So we're going to make this like a collaborative environment to try to fix the power play rather than actually take Rocky Thompson's job away. The thing that really bothered me, and I was doing all the transcribing of Danny's interview in the like hour and a half after the interviews ended. So I want to find this quote because Danny was pushed on the power play stuff. And I just feel like they are, the best way to put it is they're just, their expectations are so low that they are allowing for this to continue. Here we go. It was, I'm not saying we're going to go from around 12%. We're not going to go and double that and get to around 25%. We have to be realistic here. It's going to be small steps. And basically what he said is that the power play is going to get better because the guys here are going to get better, but it's going to take time. Here's the thing, though. Like, let's say a small step is getting to 17%, 18%. It's a 5 percentage point increase. That is still 23rd, 24th, 25th best in the league.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the idea of, well, we're not going to jump up to 25%. Like, yeah, you're not going to jump up because 25% will put them fifth in the league. I get that. But by the same token, they have to go 3 percentage points better to just catch 31st.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't like a small step. They could be measurably better. They
and
could
still be worse.
And still be the worst in the league.
Yes.
Like, I just don't think they have, it doesn't seem like they grasp the just how big of a problem this is in terms of helping them win games. And I think part of it is they do believe that the problem is the talent more than anything else. That's got to be the reason. But as we've pointed out on the show multiple times, it's really hard to accept that when you've got San Jose Sharks, the team with no one.
They're 20.
And they're in
21.
They're at 20.2. They rank 21st in the league. Like, I don't care that the Flyers don't have that much high-end talent, and I agree they don't. We've been talking about it all year. But they have more talent than the Sharks. They really do.
Yeah.
There's no reason why they can't be at least in the high teens. And the fact that the plan seems to be like, well, we're going to bring in guys already in the organization to talk more to Rocky about this stuff. Like, to me, that's an unacceptable solution. But I guess it's a solution they're trying.
My problem with it, I picked an arbitrary endpoint just when I knew they were bad, because they were bad all year, obviously. Start of the year till Christmas, they're like 10.3, 10 point. Right. They're in the 10s.
Yeah, it was real bad. Even worse than
that. All of the guys that you named, that they named, Danny Briere, Patrick Sharp, Danny Heatley, John LeClair, they all worked in the organization at that time. Why were they? I know you, again, are not the coach. Like, couldn't you have consulted them at some point when you were halfway through, maybe a third of the way through your third consecutive season having the worst power play in the league? Couldn't you have consulted these guys at Christmas?
I guess.
Over Christmas break?
I guess.
I mean, I guess that's when they were over it. They were getting ready to go to World Juniors to cut ties with Cutter Gauthier. I mean, like, what? I'm just baffled by the thinking here. This is one of the things that I just, you can't possibly think this plan is good. There's no way anyone sitting there is like, oh yeah, our power play is going to be better next year. Like, I guess if Jamie Drysdale and Morgan Frost and Tyson Forster and Owen Tippett and these guys are all take steps, if Sean Couturier can be more of a power forward around the net. Like, okay, all these things are possible, yeah. I guess. But, like, so we're not probably going to go and get any really good players. And we're not going to change the coach. And we expect something to improve.
Yeah, that is pretty much That is pretty much what it is, truthfully. It is because, I mean, that's where you get into the problem where, you know, Jonesy said on the Anthony Gargano show, I think that was earlier this week.
I believe. I think it was like Monday.
It feels like a month ago. This week has been crazy. But I believe he said on that show that, like, yeah, we might look into like a power play quarterback or something. And I think there is, I don't think that's something to just dismiss out of hand, because I do think there's value, as I said yesterday, in improving the power play so you get a better understanding of what the offensive scoring ceilings are of some of these young guys that you're going to need to make decisions on, and you're going to need to figure out just how good they are. I think there's value in that. The problem is that power play guys don't come cheap, whether it's in free agent dollars or whether it's in trade assets. Like, those guys, it's not like you're going to be able to fix the power play the same way you fix the penalty kill, which in part was because Bradshaw's a really good penalty kill coach, to be sure. But it's also in part because, like, they went out and they got Ryan Poehling and Gardner Hathaway. You know, there were additions they made to make that unit better, and it worked really well, and good job. But, like, you're not going to be able to go out and get a power play equivalent to Poehling and Hathaway, because Poehling, you were able to sign for essentially nothing. Hathaway, you were able to sign for, like, I guess, okay money for a fourth liner. If you want to get a power play quarter, like, if you want to go out and you want to sign Shane Gostisbehere or Tyson Barry, or trade for a skilled forward to slap on one of the off walls, like, that's going to cost $4 million a year, like, in terms of cap for a free agent. And in terms of trade assets, it's probably going to cost you like a second or third round pick.
It's something they don't want to give up.
And they made it clear, and that's probably going to be the main theme of the article I'm going to write later tonight, is that they made it clear the rebuild is still on, that this does not change their view that we are still a rebuilding team. But if you're still a rebuilding team, you're probably not going to want to give up the assets, whether in cap space or actual assets, to fix the power play from the outside. So if you're not going to do that, and you're not going to change the coach, all that's left really is the players further developing. And my concern is that I don't know how much more development they can do under this power play coach.
That's like, if you need those guys to develop, like, I don't want to take away from the work he's done with the forwards.
Yeah, I think he's been fine
overall
with the forwards on the whole.
Like, I think if they want to keep him on in that role, as you've said, like, that's fine. It's just like, if you want to develop the skill set of this specific thing, I don't see how you can do that when the guy's been here for 2 years and they've been the worst in the league for two. Like, it's all the same guys.
Yeah.
I know. We're just talking in circles. It's just a very frustrating line of thinking, and that's not going to end. You know what else isn't going to end anytime soon? It's allergy season. That's right.
Rocky Thompson, the allergy.
Yeah. If they're allergic to scoring goals on the power play, you're probably allergic to tree pollen. Listen, it's that time of year. Birds are chirping. Grass is growing. Hockey playoffs start tomorrow.
They do.
And that means eyes are watering and throats are scratchy. Everyone out there who has been listening to the show for the last few weeks and months knows I'm an allergy sufferer. You can hear it in my voice on plenty of days. Pollen from trees, grasses, and weeds are a primary cause of seasonal allergies. Symptoms flare when the pollen you're allergic to is in the air. It's possible to be allergic to just one or several types. It sucks. I'll be honest with you. It sucks. But there are steps you can take to alleviate some of your allergy symptoms. First and foremost, sign up for Rite Aid Rewards emails at riteaid.com/rewards to receive email pollen alerts for your area. If pollen counts are high, stay indoors. Keep windows closed and run air conditioners as needed. Try to remove your shoes and coats near your door to minimize tracking pollen inside your home. Take a shower before bedtime to help wash away any pollen from your skin and hair. And of course, you can visit your local Rite Aid to stock up on over-the-counter allergy solutions like nasal rinse and antihistamines. Still not enough relief? Ask a Rite Aid pharmacist if a different type of allergy medication, like a decongestant, might be necessary. You can always ask your Rite Aid pharmacist for recommendations on ways to get relief during allergy season. Visit your local Rite Aid today, stock up on allergy relief, or catch up on immunizations for RSV, shingles, and more. Walk in or schedule a vaccine appointment at riteaid.com. We need to be... needs some sort of vaccination for this power play. Another interesting piece I took away, interesting, I guess, piece of information, the plan moving forward. We have talked about what the goalie tandem could potentially be next year. And all signs do point to Ersin Fedotov.
Yeah.
Briere on the 2024-25 goalie plan. That's what we're planning on, would be Ersin and Fedotov next season. Something could change, especially with the history of this organization with goaltending. It seems there's always some drama there, but it would be nice to get away from the drama. It sure would, Danny.
I feel like I should put that in my
your tombstone,
my Twitter like bio, and just quote it and be like, "Please, that should be, Flyers, stop with the constant drama."
That should be your new like pinned tweet.
Yeah, exactly.
Ersin Fedotov, we'll see what happens with Kolesov, and it wasn't completely ruled out that things could change there.
Sure.
I have floated the idea of, let's carry three goalies. Like, if it's always a problem, let's plan ahead and not go with, you know, Cal Peterson and whoever the hell is in the AHL to replace Felix Sandstrom, because I assume he's gone. You know, they can't possibly be we need to bring that guy back.
I honestly don't remember if his contract expires or if he's under contract for next
year. I'm fairly certain he is a UFA.
If he's a UFA, I think there's a good chance he's gone. But if he's under contract, they'll keep him.
Yeah, obviously. Let's see. Sandstrom is a 2024-25 UFA. Yes, this is last year.
Okay, yeah. So he'll probably be gone.
Like, I can't imagine they're like, oh, this guy who the coach refused to play at every possible chance, let's keep him in the
order. My guess is they'll keep Cal Peterson just around because, like, hey, he could be the AHL goalie. He's clearly not an NHL caliber goalie. I do think this is interesting on a few levels, though, this Ersin Fedotov thing. That they are almost certainly going to be the tandem. They gave themselves a little bit of wiggle room where if something changes, but it seems like this is going to be the tandem for next year. There are two things this tells me. The first thing, which again, I've said on this pod, I agree with, they very much believe in Sam Ersin. They think that if he's not being absolutely run into the friggin' ground, that he is already a solid NHL goalie, and they think he has even further upside than that. So they are excited to see what Ersin can do as the guy leading the tandem, but not the guy who's playing 20 out of 24 games.
We even said yesterday, like, if you want to play him 50 times again, all right.
That's totally
fine. But it doesn't have to be 18 out of 21.
Exactly.
Like, you can just kind of sprinkle it in. Yeah.
Which I think they plan to do. Yeah. The other thing this tells me, and this is interesting, and this brings me to a few of Danny's comments that he made. The fact that they plan to go into the season with Ersin Fedotov tells me that they, again, next year will be okay with not making the playoffs. Because that is a move that is a plan you execute if you don't feel the urgency to make the playoffs right now. Because you're right. If your goal is like playoffs at all costs, we want to win, this is a risky tandem. Ersin, who, you know, end of season numbers, they don't look good. I don't think it's fair to judge them on those, but objectively speaking, they look bad. Like, when the predictive models will come out for next season, they will not take into account that Ersin was running to the ground. They're going to look at his numbers, and they're going to be like, he stinks. The Flyers are going to be bad because their goaltending sucks. And then Fedotov, who knows what he is? He could be real good. He could be real bad. I hope he has a good NHL career, because given all the crap he went through to get here, I think it would be awesome if he gets rewarded by his game translating. It would be cool, but we don't know. That tandem is a real risk to go with if your goal is to make the playoffs. If your goal is to continue to rebuild and develop, though, then it makes a heck of a lot more sense. And Danny straight up said, these are the quotes I want to get to from the beginning of the presser, when he was talking about the playoffs, and he's like, I'm still not quite there as far as saying that we're a contender. I don't believe we're at the point where it's time to let some young assets go to try to get better quicker. We're not there yet. But this was the money quote. And I know the expectation next year will be that, oh, we've got to get in the playoffs. I don't even know that we're there yet. That is fascinating, because, and it speaks to what I'm talking about with the goalies, where it seems like next year is going to be another, like, let's just let it ride and see what happens, rather than a year of, we are turning the corner and actually, like, playoffs are the goal, and if we don't reach the playoffs, it's a failure. I think that's interesting, because again, if playoffs are the goal, this is not an intelligent risk to take.
No.
But if development and figuring things out and stockpiling assets and, you know, basically building for a year or two down the road is the plan, then this tandem makes perfect sense, because it's kind of like looking at it that way, there's two good outcomes. Outcome number one is one or both of those guys show they're real good and you have the solution to the goalie problem. Option number two is it's a disaster and the team picks in the top five.
That's and like the best way to ensure you're not going to make the playoffs is have huge question marks in net.
Exactly.
Like you can have a decent enough team. You can have okay talent. I'm not saying like a great team. You can have decent enough talent. Like, okay, expectations, maybe we're in the playoffs, maybe we're not. And goalies can put you high in the lottery, you know?
Yep.
That's just the way goaltending is in this sport. It has such an outsized like impact on the result of your individual games. This does get me to, these are quotes, I had them further down, but since you got to them.
Yeah.
I know, again, like, it's going to be talking in circles a little bit. But when I hear, I don't even know that we're there yet. It was a great year, but there's still a long ways to go. I say, Danny's right. But why aren't we taking it down to the studs again then? Like, it just gets back to this, like, step one, collect underpants. Step two, question mark. Step three, profit. Like, where does the thing that makes us the contender come from?
Well, to be clear, I think Briere articulated a lot of that. And this is something that, like, fans aren't going to like. But, frankly, like, and this is, I will kind of shit on fans here. Like, fans do not believe that players can get paid. Players that are established NHLers can actually get better until they actually get better. And then it's, oh, well, they were going to be good all along. Danny Briere and the Flyers very much believe that a lot of the guys already on the roster can get a lot better. I think that is part of their solution. That, like, it is completely unacceptable for fans to hear that, like, well, like, Joel Farabee is going to take another step and Tyson Forster might be a potential star and Owen Tippett could get better. Like, that is unacceptable to them because they look at these guys and they're like, I know what these guys are. They're not good enough. Briere's response is, no, you don't. They could get better. We think they're going to get better. And that's going to go a long way towards solving the talent problem. That, I think, would be Briere's answer. And I don't know if I believe that all of these guys are going to become stars, but I do think that fans can, particularly fans that lean towards pessimism, which Flyers fans absolutely do, can mentally rule out the possibility that guys they think they know could actually take a big step forward.
It's not that I don't think the guys they have can take big steps forward. I still believe, like, Owen Tippett has a 40-goal season in him. I still believe Jamie Drysdale could be a big part of this. Like, I think a lot of these dudes definitely could. I think Tyson Forster could end up being, like, first-line caliber player because of his two-way play and ability to score. All these things are possible. It's still, though, like, teams that win the Cup have those guys and superstars.
I mean, they need at least one superstar. They hope they have it in Michkov. I don't think they necessarily need four. I think that we've convinced ourselves, like, did Vegas have four superstars? They had one in Eichel. Then they had a guy in Mark Stone who, like, we're hoping Tyson Forster can become that. I think that is the best case scenario, but it's a possibility. The numbers certainly look good. Like, Vegas just won the Cup by having one superstar. I feel like because over the last 6-7 years, we've watched Colorado and Tampa Bay do it, we kind of have decided that, like, that's you can only win with five fucking amazing players. And I don't think you need five.
I just, like, even if it's not, they're all, like, Hart or Norris candidates.
We're, like, Hall of Famers.
Yeah, even if it's not that, it's just, like, all right, you have a Selke guy in Taves. You have a Hart guy in Kane. You have Duncan Keith, who's a Norris guy. And then you have also Brent Seabrook, like, who can light the lamp for you on the power play, score some big goals. And you have a Marian Hossa, who he just does everything really, really well.
Yeah.
Like, I just see this model as we're skipping 2 to 3 years from now. What's going to be different? Like, other than Michkov here,
we'll see.
That's the question.
And I guess
from those quotes.
And their response would be, in 3 to 4 years, hopefully, or 2 to 3, whatever you want to use, Tyson Forrester will be a really good player. Joel Farabee could be a really good player. Sam Harrison could be a clear-cut number one goalie who is putting up, you know, 9-10 plus save percentages every year. Cam York could be a clear-cut first pair defenseman. Oliver Bonk could be here. Mitch Goff, obviously, is the big one. Owen Tippett could be a 40-goal scorer. Like, they're looking at it as the most skeptical fans are underrating the talent they already have on hand. That's the way they're looking at it. Now, they might be wrong. None of these guys might end up being all that good. That was one of the I won't even go so far as to call it a mistake, but one of the bets that Hextall made that didn't pan out was he bet on the guys he took at the top of the draft, at least a few of them, becoming impact-level guys. He was betting on Provorov, Konechny, Sanheim, Hart, Farabee, because that was the last year, Patrick, of course, Frost. And out of all of them,
German Rubsa,
like, I don't mean Rubsov. I don't think they became pretty clear pretty quick that he wasn't going to be that guy. But the only guy out of that crew that hit that point was Travis Konechny. And he did it after Hextall was long gone. That was the risk he took. The risk he took was that if we'd make a lot of picks and we just, you know, accumulate a ton of draft pick assets, that some of these guys are going to become stars. And the problem was that none of them really did, with the exception of Konechny, and he's more of a tier two star than a tier one star anyway.
And that's why I can't blame people for the pessimism.
Yeah.
Because it has played out this way.
They've watched it before.
It has played out this way before. I see we have a super chat up from, oh, look at that. That's a perfect font right there.
Yeah, you can read it again.
I can. From Who Is Mike Maul? Based on his responses today, is it time to worry Danny and Jonesy aren't thinking big enough in terms of the level of high-end talent they're looking to eventually acquire? And there is a question about that I want to get to in a second.
Okay.
Because that is, I do think, like, the way in which they're going to go about it, there is a good model, I think, for what they're doing, and it's the 08 to 11 Flyers. I think that model, it's just like they didn't do it, but they were good enough to.
Yeah.
And they, personality they, reasons,
they,
off
they,
ice
they
shit.
Made the big swing trade for Pronger when it presented itself.
And you do that by having mid-tier guys like a Lucas Pisa you got in the first round, but not high.
Yeah.
And Joffrey Lupul, who's a nice player.
Yeah.
But ain't
certainly expendable
needle.
To get a Hall of Fame defenseman.
Exactly. Like, I do think, like, maybe the best model is that team from 08 to 11. We'll see. Like, we'll see. they're making that bet, Charlie. If you want to make that bet,
Hey-o.
You got to do it on the Bet Park Sportsbook app. That's right. The Bet Park Sportsbook app. Listen, it starts tomorrow, fam. You want to get your Stanley Cup futures in now. And you got to do it with Bet Park Sportsbook. Listen, you know, money is in the moments. Put some money on those moments. Stanley Cup playoffs are always a great fun time. It's even more fun when you've got some skin in the game. You can win big with all day action. And you can win your first $10. If you win your first $10 bet, you can earn $125 in sports bet bonuses. That's right. You play for fun. You love to win. You bet. Download the app and play along with us. Must be 21 or older. Please gamble responsibly. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I think, you know, and this really, because it's funny, like, I am working through the press conference in my head because I didn't have a chance to do it before the show. Like, I basically, after the two pressers, I immediately started transcribing the entirety of Danny, then hopped in the car and drove here. So I haven't really had a chance to internally think about what was said. But the more we talk it through and the more I have a chance to kind of turn over the quotes in my head, the thing that jumps out to me the most about Danny's press conference in particular, because, like, look, I know people are obsessed with John Tortorella because he's John Tortorella. I will always be far more interested in hearing what the GM has to say at the
end
of the year.
He's actually got to execute the plan.
Than the coach. Like, to me, the coach at the end of the year is like, okay, you have to answer for what you did, but the GM tells us what he's going to do. And I find that to be a lot more interesting. But getting back to what I was getting at, the thing that stands out to me the most about Danny's presser in particular, but Torts has enough in there to support this as well, is just the relative lack of urgency. That's really what pervades and links together all of this. Like, they're cool going with Arison and Fedotov because they don't feel the urgency to go out and sign a Stolarz because we got to make the playoffs.
They're not going to go out and spend assets on expensive free agents trades or whatever.
Right. They're not even going to change the power play coach because they think that they have the pieces here, whether it's players or whether it's outside voices or whether it's just Rocky Thompson finally figuring it out. They want to give it time to work because they don't feel like they have to make a big move to fix this because they just don't feel the urgency. They feel like they are still on track with their plan. And because of that, they're not going to set this into overdrive by doing a lot of stuff. Now, that's not to say that they won't make a couple big moves this summer. They might do a hockey trade to bring in a guy in his mid-20s who maybe they think has high-end potential. Obviously, it's not going to be identical to the Cutter Gauthier trade, but same concept. Like, Drysdale's another guy where they think Drysdale can be a high-end player. Most people in the fan base don't believe that will happen right now, but I don't think it is impossible. I don't even think it's like, I think there's like a double-digit percent chance that Jamie Drysdale ultimately becomes a guy where 4 or 5 years down the line, we're like, holy shit, that guy's real good. Now, I wouldn't bet on it. I don't think it's an above 50% chance, but I think it's a lot higher of a chance than the vast majority of people in my mention seem to believe it is, because the vast majority of those people don't think he's ever going to play more than 40 games in a season in his NHL career. That's kind of what I'm getting at, where like the organization, I did not get a sense of urgency from Briere in particular. I got the sense that they are just going to kind of continue to let this play out and continue to stockpile assets and continue to look for the right deals. They're not going to rush into anything because they came a couple points away from making the playoffs this year.
And that's, it is the way to go about it. That's absolutely right. I do wonder though, like how that plays out with Spectacor management. Like, there was a lot of goodwill this year to start.
Yeah, there was.
Because they said the word rebuild, because they gave us a, you know, a plan and everything. Say, if things start to go the way I think they're going to go next year, where maybe they're not as good as they were this season, maybe the building isn't quite as full. Maybe the goodwill isn't quite as there because it's year two of another season where it's like, you know, we don't. To quote another, you know, well-loved member of Philadelphia sports management, I'm interested to see how long this leash is. And not like I don't think Danny's going to get fired or anything, but we even saw Ron Hextall, who had that, yeah, you know, the players will let us know, like basically the same kind of thought process. Yeah. And then eventually he was like, fuck it. Give me James Van Riemsdyk.
It's fair.
You know?
You're not wrong.
Let's shut him up.
I do think, because I've made this point multiple times, some people make it out of anger. I make it out of a matter of fact evaluation, and also without the belief that the Ron Hextall plan was destined to fail. I think it was a failure of execution, not a failure of strategy, that if they would have just made better draft picks, that plan probably would have friggin' worked. You replace Ivan Provorov with Mikko Rantanen, and you replace Nolan Patrick with Miro Heiskanen. Flyers are probably competing for cups and Claude Giroux is probably still here. It didn't work. But point being,
God damn it,
point being, yeah, there you go. Point being is this. I just lost my train of thought. This is like the first time it's happened all year.
I do it every show.
Yeah. What were you talking about before then?
No, just like when.
Sorry, I am so burnt out right now.
When does this plan, like, will they ever be pressured to kick this thing into overdrive? Because we're going to have another year next year where it's like...
The Hextall.
All right, it doesn't really matter.
I think the difference between the Hextall plan and the Briere-Jones plan, they pulled the plug on the Hextall plan in large part because they didn't personally like Ron Hextall. Hextall was not doing the other things to keep everyone happy, and I think that was a big reason why they just lost faith in the entirety of the plan. Because he wasn't keeping the alumni happy, because Holmgren had lost faith in him, because all of these, because he kept the inner circle too tight. These are things that Danny Briere and Keith Jones very much are not doing. So I think because of that, because they are playing the game more than Hextall ever was willing to or was able to do, I think they will get longer leashes from the guys at the top, the Dan Hilfertys and whatnot, to keep doing this plan the way they see it. I think that was the big reason why the plug was pulled when it was. It wasn't necessarily because, like, if Hextall would have been the touchy-feely, like, you know, we're doing all the right things with all the people in the organization and making everyone feel like they're part of this, I think he would have gotten a much longer leash. Perfect example being Chuck Fletcher did all those things and got a far longer leash than he probably deserved because everybody liked the guy and they wanted to believe he would figure it out. I think Jonesy and Briere are going to get the same leash because I hope they're better at their jobs than Fletcher was, but also they're doing the things that Fletcher did, but just even better because I think the communication is significantly better now than even it was under Fletcher.
So maybe the biggest reveal of today, Jamie Drysdale, you know, we knew about the shoulder injury before he was acquired. And when you watch the hit that ultimately knocked him out for all the time he missed with the Flyers, it's like, oh, fucked up his shoulder. Core muscle surgery? I would rather you tell me he needs a robot leg.
I told you he was going to get surgery.
I know surgery, Charlie. I know surgery. It's the whole core muscle thing that I have seen play out with this team.
This is where it all stems from. It's all just like PTSD from what people have dealt with in the past.
Yes.
Everybody's terrified about Jamie Drysdale because of what happened with Ryan Ellis. Everybody's terrified about this plan.
And Drew
because
of what, and because Ghost
of,
and Kevin
because
Hayes.
Because of what happened with Hextall. Everybody's terrified. It's all like, well, all of this is getting judged on what other regimes and other players did, not what these guys will do.
What else can you possibly judge things on?
But they're different people.
Past results, you say this all the time.
Yeah, by the same people. These are different people. They're different players.
They're
different people in the organization. Right. They're different people making the decisions.
When I watch three different players have core muscle surgery and none of them were ever the same skater, like, Jamie Drysdale's number one asset is skating. That scares me.
And it was still really good even while he's playing through this thing. You remember what Giroux looked like when he was trying to play through this thing? The guy could barely move.
Yes, he's considerably younger. But Shane Gostisbehere was considerably younger as well. Like, Kevin Hayes, he was always slow. So yeah, him getting slower, really like, it. Yeah, now he's like a healthy scratch sometimes. Like, that's fine. I'm just... core muscle surgery is much more of a scary proposition to me for a guy like him than he needs his shoulder cleaned up. Like,
I would have been more scared about the shoulder if it would have been the same shoulder that he already had, like, the one big
Nolan
surgery
Patrick,
on. That
same
would scare
thing.
The hell out of me.
Nolan Patrick was a physical freak in juniors, and then he just never got the thing straightened out. And by the time he did here, it was like, yeah, this is procedure number three. And he had zero explosion at the NHL level.
I guess where I'm at is worries me. You can be pessimistic if you want. And I got the sense that a lot of fans today were very pessimistic about pretty much everything they heard. I just, like, it's so exhausting to me to stay that pessimistic about everything. Like, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that this shit actually works out better than people are fearing it's going to.
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility either. I don't even think this is necessarily pessimism. This is just your reaction to hearing something.
Yeah, okay.
When I hear Jamie Drysdale needs core muscle surgery, I go, what the fuck? It was his shoulder. Like, how is it this other unrelated thing now? And it's this thing that we have seen play out in this city, on this team, multiple times, rarely to good results. That's all.
I'm not saying, this is in response to this club person. I'm not saying to blindly believe. I'm just saying don't blindly assume that everything is going to be the worst case scenario.
I think best case scenarios are possible for players that are like on an upward trajectory. I love what I saw out of Tyson Forster. Like, I think Sam Ersson could very well end up being a number one goalie in this league. Because they're guys I watched and I assessed what they did. Mm-hmm. It's these guys with outside things happening. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't just about Jamie Drysdale's raw tools now. It's what's left of those raw tools after an injury-plagued two full seasons.
That's fair.
Like,
I am choosing to believe that we're going to, at the very least, get to see what he can become. That it's not going to be 4 years down the line that we never got to see what Jamie Drysdale would have been had he not had the injuries. I'm choosing to believe that, and I don't, like, my concern about Drysdale, and this is always going to be my concern about Drysdale, is just that he's not very good. Like, that's my concern. I guess that's where I differ from a lot of people, because it seems like a lot of people's main concern is that he's just injury prone and he's not going to play. My main concern is more like he has never really produced especially strong underlying results thus far in his NHL career. Some guys, yeah, maybe he was rushed to the NHL. Some guys turn that around. A lot of guys, what they show when they're 19, 20, 21 really does speak to what they're going to be. That's my bigger concern about Jamie Drysdale. So I am choosing not to fret about the injuries. I think he will get past them, and I think we will get to see what he is. My main concern is I'm afraid that when we get to see what he is isn't all that great.
Well, that's, I think it's just adding to the anxiety or whatever you want to call about the situation. Like, what is a player's actual ceiling? What is he going to be? Is one worry about a player's development. Another one is, do we even ever get to see that? You know, and those are now both kind of concerns for this thing. Let's get to a super chat before I do this last read from a VNet Singh. Do Torts and Danny Briere's comments today, i.e. we're not close to where we want to be, in any way change the approach with TK, both in their minds and yours? I think it definitely should factor in. Like, I really don't understand the thought process of signing a big money pending free agent when the playoffs are not in your future. Like, it's not part of your plan.
At least not next year.
It's like not part of your plan next year. And then in the preceding years, no one ever just makes the playoffs and is in the
No, Flyers did.
And that was a team that was in the playoffs the 2 years prior to that.
Yeah.
But like, it usually takes, you have a couple, all right, we made it to the first round. We got out of this. We got to a conference final. All right, now we're like, goal is we got to be in the final four. We're one of those teams. And then it's, we're cup contenders. Well, now we're talking about 31-year-old Travis Konecny. Like, I don't see how he matches the timeline.
I thought it was interesting that, and maybe Danny just kind of missed, because it was a weirdly worded question. Mike Sielski asked it, and it was a question about Owen Tippett and Travis Konecny. And basically, like, how do you balance, you know, giving Owen Tippett a long-term contract and the decision you're going to have to make on Travis Konecny with the fact that you're in a rebuild and giving out those contracts is a risk? And I thought it was interesting, though, that Briere mostly focused on Tippett and didn't really talk about Konecny. I still believe they're going to re-sign Konecny. I think they're going to. But I will say that Konechny's dodging of the answers at his exit interview about the contract situation, and then Briere not really wanting to talk about Konecny, it raises my eyebrows a little bit that, you know, maybe they're not as certain that they're going to re-sign Travis Konecny as I thought they were.
I kind of got that read on it as well, and I always try to put myself in everyone's place. Like, how would I feel in this situation? Charlie, I watch you come in at the end of the season covering this team. You're pretty exhausted. You're pretty burnt out. And I'm just thinking
of,
like,
do I need to chill?
No, like, I was going to get there. Okay. But, like, if I could put myself in Travis Konecny's place, I'm like, all right, we missed the playoffs. That was a real grind. I got to come back and do this shit again next year. Like, and it's going to be probably the exact same. Like, I would be really burnt out on this thing. And we're suddenly like, I love Philly. I also want to, like, not be exhausted every day.
You know? Yeah.
Like, I can see him thinking that. And maybe he's kind of like, yeah, I ain't signing July 1st. Let's see where things are January 1st. Let's see where things are leading up to my, you know, I can just see that. But I think Charlie's main point is here that we all just gotta chill. This team, they drive us nuts. We've been doing this a long time, and just talking about them still gets us fired up. And that's why sometimes I need to chill, and there's no better way to chill than with an ice cold Coors Light. So whether you're freaking out about how long the rebuild is going to take, injuries, surgeries, the upcoming draft, you need to find the Blue Mountains in your fridge and enjoy a beer as cold as the Rockies, because when everything surrounding your favorite hockey team is on fire, and when isn't it? Sometimes you just gotta chill. When you choose to rise above it all, choose chill, choose Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/PHLYHockey. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. All right, the last thing I want to get to today, Charlie, it's Michkov. No good news.
The Mad Russian.
No, yes, our Mad Russian. I guess Danny did say if something were to come up where we could get him early, we'd love that.
Yeah.
But that involves him getting out of his contract, and it's a whole bunch of complicated shit that I'm not going to get into right now. Like, that's it ain't happening. I'm working as if it's not happening.
Which they
should.
And if
it does, yeah. Dope.
They should be but working as if it's will. Not happening. What I'll say about Michkov is this. I have more confidence now than I did 2 months ago that Matvei Michkov will get over here earlier than, like, 2 years down the road. And it all is driven by the Fedotov thing.
The Fedotov contract situation where all of a sudden he had another year left.
Yes.
And it was just suddenly terminated.
Yep.
They didn't terminate that contract. Someone paid them to terminate that contract.
Something happened. You would assume that there was some sort of backroom handshake agreement, and that there was negotiating where the Flyers, I would guess, were involved in some form. They will probably never reveal the specifics.
Probably can't.
But it gives me the confidence that, and I tweeted this out, gives me the confidence that if Michkov's team opens the door a bit to the idea of, okay, how can we come to some sort of agreement that will allow him to leave a year early? I am much more confident that the Flyers will be able to navigate that because they already showed they could.
There's this small piece of me that I won't let breathe all that often, but it exists, that I just look at Danny when he talks about Michkov and he's like, yeah, you know, maybe, who's to say? And then one day he's just going to dump it out on the table and be like, he's here, bitches. What do you say now? Like, this is what, like, it's a small part of me. And, like, maybe it could happen tomorrow because this is the Philadelphia Flyers and Charlie thinks he has tomorrow off. He's going to strangle me for saying this. But, like, a small part of me is hoping, but reading those quotes, they are, like, treating it the right way. It ain't probably going to happen. We're going to prepare as if it's not, like, you know, prepare for, like, hope for sunshine, prepare for rain, sort of thing.
And a lot of this, too, what you have to remember with Danny and what he can and can't say, the way that this gets resolved in the sense of the Flyers getting Michkov early, part of the way that happens is Danny not pissing anyone off over there. If Danny starts saying quotes of, yeah, like, yeah, we think we can get him out of that contract, or he starts, you know, hinting at the possibility, then all those Russian oligarchs over there are going to be like, well, fuck you. He's under contract, and we're not only going to make him spend the final 2 years, we're going to strong arm him and sign an extension, because what are you going to do? This is how things happen in Russia.
Yeah.
So Briere has to be deferential. That's part of the strategy.
Absolutely.
He was very deferential in the Fedotov situation. Like, that was a war that the NHL had with the IAHF and the KHL. The Flyers very purposely stayed out of it because they did not want, and this was on and off the record when I would bring it up to people, it would be like, look, that kid's been through enough. We're not going to rock the boat here. I think it's the same philosophy with Michkov, where if they are able to get him out early, it's in large part because
they
played nice. Exactly. So keep that in mind when you're listening to these quotes, that Danny saying things like this, there's another reason why he's saying things like this, because the fan base is not the only audience here. There is an audience over in Russia paying very close attention to what the Flyers are saying because they don't want to feel like they're being unduly pressured to do something that they really don't have to do. He's under contract. They can just be like, nah, sorry, tough shit.
Tough shit. Yeah. This is what a world. Hockey is such a wild world.
It sure is.
Like, this shit don't happen in football. It's just insane.
It would be kind of wild if there were, like, Russian NFL, NFL players.
It's just like the next Peyton Manning. It's like, yeah, man, when he finishes up on the front lines in the Ukraine, like, oh, get ready. God. Like, oh, but, like that, that's, you know, that's what would happen. Damn. All right. That is all the time we have for you on PHLY Flyers. Thank you very much to our sponsors, our friends over at Mortgage CS. Make sure you check out mortgagecs.com/PHLY today to start your home buying process. We will be back to you next week. And I think our summer schedule starts at next week.
It does.
I believe I am allowed to say that until otherwise noted, all of our shows Monday to Friday this summer, 1 p.m. fam. So make sure you subscribed on the YouTube. Set those reminders. My name is Bill Matz. That's Charlie O'Connor. Have a great weekend, Philly.
We all silly like the mayor.